Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, for all of you who thought I would not have a voice after last night, you are incorrect. Three overtimes. One of the more bizarre nights. The end of the first overtime. I don't think anybody knows if he had the ball in his hands or not. That's why I said in the broadcast, if this were football, the announcement probably would have been made as stands as called. Stands as called means they don't know. And I think after 5 minutes, Gene Steratore, Larry Scarrato, and Bo Borowski did not know. So the call on the floor was it was good. So they stuck with what the call was on the floor. I think if they had called it no good at the end and reviewed it, they probably would have had said it was no good. I had a limited look at it. We did not have an actual monitor at our spot, but they have this gigantic video board, which I would think is proportional to Assembly Hall as to what the proportion would be at Jerry World with their video board. It's the same concept. And it's HD, the whole thing. And I watched it live, and I called it good, and I said, we're going to a second overtime. And Dick and I both clearly felt that he got the shot off in real time. And then the replay came up, and the two of us looked at each other and said, oh, isn't that clear cut? And I don't know how many of you saw it, but I don't know. So I will go along with what they did because I just don't know. I think it would be, I'm not going to sit there and criticize those three. I mean, I'm looking at it, and I'm not quite sure. I would have had to really have had a wide variety of looks to really know, but I don't know. Sean, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, that was an amazing three overtime game last night. I was in the Eagle 107 studio producing Bucknell basketball, and I thought, oh, boy, Penn State game will be done long before the Bucknell game, which both games ended at almost the same time. Actually, Penn State game ended a little later than our broadcast. And what a time for three of Indiana's players to have their all-time high games in terms of scoring.
Well, in three overtimes, you'll get that. Bryant's a top 20 NBA pick, so let's start there. I mean, we already know. There's a lot of talk that Bryant might come out last year and didn't. Came back for one more year. I cannot picture Thomas Bryant sticking around for a third year at Indiana. He's a top 20 NBA pick. I think, let's be generous, top 25, but he'll be a first-round pick. Johnson's not, but Johnson's always been a good shooter. And Newkirk had been a Pitt's best game he ever had. He had 27. He had a big three in the third overtime last night. And when nobody had any legs left, he knocked one down. Penn State missed free throws. What was odd about Penn State missing free throws last night, it was not that down the stretch they missed the front end. They hit all their front ends down the stretch. They missed all the bonuses, which was really odd. But Indiana did the same thing. They missed free throws. Penn State has not shot free throws the last couple of weeks. I don't know why. They should work on it more. You don't think they don't work on it? They're always doing stuff. Always. Okay. It's a constant thing. Jimmy Cephalo is going to be on the show today. I know you've been looking forward to that. Speaks highly of you, Sean.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, he was asking me straight out. He says, so what is the possibility of Sean in the suit?
Really? Come on.
And I had to.
Yeah, busy guy. Doing mornings in Miami. Of course, Dolphins play-by-play. And has a TV show. I think it runs weekends in Miami regarding food and wine. And yeah.
It's on iHeartRadio.
Yeah.
It's on iHeartRadio. So... yeah, so we're going to get into all of that with him and also about playing in the Super Bowl. He saw the Patriots twice this year as the Dolphins play-by-play announcer. And we will get into all of that with him. Well, what do you say, 4:06 today we're going to have him on?
Sure. Whenever you want him. Ready to go. We'll get him.
Whenever I want. Mm-hmm. Ready to go. Great. So what do we have today? What, Matt Leon, Neil Coulong, and Jimmy?
Yes, yes, and yes.
And tomorrow we're going to have Mike Conti from the Falcons Network. We're going to have a writer from the Boston Globe tomorrow. And we're going to have, and we might have Jeff Byers briefly tomorrow on Penn State Wrestling. They've got another route at hand with Ohio State coming up. That's always a lot of fun to watch the routes.
And that's actually a 6 o'clock start tomorrow night from Columbus. Of course, all the wrestling fans already know that.
I mean, I laughed, but I felt badly for the wrestling fans last year when Ohio State came here. And you're saying laughed. You know, of course, you know, sellout crowd, they come in, the whole deal. But it was what? I think it was a 6 o'clock start last year, right?
Yeah, the one at the Jordan Center, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, Friday night at 6, yep.
And I had all these wrestling fans complaining to me about the 6 o'clock start and how, you know, it's inconvenient for us. And I looked at him, I said, welcome to the real world. mean, what do you think I've been living with in football and basketball for 35 years? Okay. I mean, I feel badly because I think it's wrong. Right? I mean, I feel badly it's wrong. I completely agree with them that 6 o'clock is a bad start time, and it's bad for people to go from work to try and get there or to make a two-hour trip in to see a wrestling match. I completely agree with that. But the last person to look at and complain about it to is me. Okay, why do you think I had a game at 6:30 last night? Why do you think Saturday's game's at 1? Why do you think the game at Nebraska is at 9 o'clock Eastern time? Why?
Two letters. TV.
It's a second 9 o'clock game on a Tuesday night in a span of, what, 3 weeks? 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks.
I think it's great we've had the chance to at least see some live Penn State wrestling, even though it's only been, you know, two dual meets in the last 3 weeks, but they've both been on Friday night, and
yeah,
and this time,
fine.
And this time of year, Big Ten Network has you know, they're getting into a bigger commitment running the hockey games on Friday night.
Yeah,
just most of those, because most of the hockey games are they do those weekend series, right?
Right, they do Friday, Saturday, but I mean, I.
So, yeah, that's a balancing, scheduling act that has got to be a lot of time and effort into that.
I mean, I completely agree with every Penn State wrestling fan that says it's wrong they did that. I agree with you completely. But football and men's basketball has been a TV show for decades where you're slotted and you play. And I've talked about, you know, I was talking about the 9 o'clock starts on the road during the middle of the week at the furthest reach of the conference. I mean, can't tell me you're all about the student athlete when that happens. You can't. But, you know, we want more coverage of wrestling on TV. Fine. So you get more coverage of wrestling on TV, it's at 6 o'clock. Oh, that's awful. Okay. We can't have everything your own way here. I mean, I understand. I'd like to have everything my own way, too. I'd be doing this show from the beach. But that's not going to happen. One of the great scams in the history of the world took place this morning. We'll talk about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. In one of the great scams in the history of the world that only America could come up with, took place this morning at Gobbler's Knob. Thousands of people show up. I mean, look, America loves a party. And I give whomever came up with this idea in 1886 and then for the first time tried it out in 1887. People come in, they go to all the stores, they go to the restaurants, they sell out the hotels. It is a brilliant, brilliant way to bring people to the community in the first week of February. And so today, thanks to the TV lights, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow this morning. He's predicted six more weeks of winter. Ironically, if you were to check your calendar, winter ends in 6 weeks. It is the 103rd time he has predicted that winter ends in 6 weeks. Now, he predicts, you know, they say 6 weeks, right? Six more weeks of winter. But what he does is he predicts long winter, early spring, in terms of the weather. He has been correct 39% of the time. These things run across the road, never make it. And we're trusting it to tell us what the weather's going to be. They climb up on tires and fall to their death. What? But I give them credit. They feed him something called groundhog punch. Ironically, at a couple of the parties that I've gone to with you guys, it appeared that the suit was downing some of those, too. And you refer to it as a chaser and being medicinal. I don't know what that means.
They're pretty smooth.
Yeah. Okay. So the groundhog, of course, portrayed in the movie Groundhog Day. Now, the film was actually filmed in Woodstock, Illinois. Do you know that?
Did not know that.
I think they did a couple of outtakes or whatever in Punxsutawney, but it's actually filmed in Woodstock, Illinois. There is a segment in there that I actually helped out on. The producers of the movie needed to have a Penn State basketball game in the background, and I supplied them with footage of it. And the key, of course, was the footage had to be there was no player still eligible playing in the game. It's an NCAA rule. Phil has appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show. He's also been on MTV. Butler County, Ohio prosecutor named Michael Gosmer in international headlines after issuing an indictment against the groundhog by email, calling for the death penalty for misrepresenting early spring, an unclassified felony, and against the peace and dignity of the state of Ohio. On that day, the maximum temperature of the day within the region was close to a record low, with snow falling at the time that they filed this. Temperatures were predicted to remain below seasonal averages for at least the next several days. No such indictment was made against the Ohio prediction groundhog, Buckeye Chuck, who had failed to see a shadow. They said they only did this because they felt it was an advertising campaign. The Merrimack Police Department in New Hampshire issued an arrest warrant for Punxsutawney Phil for having failed to disclose the extreme amounts of snow that would ensue after Groundhog Day on February 11, 2015. Oh, and you wonder why other cultures think we're vulnerable. All right, so... Have you ever been to Gobbler's Knob?
Never actually stopped in Punxsutawney. I've driven past it. I've been on route, what is it, route 219?
Yes.
Yes, I've been, I before they took care of the, you know, the four lane of, you know, I-99 going down the, you know, past below State College to Altoona, I'd go that way. I'd take 219 down to 22 to get to Pittsburgh to the Steeler games. So I've driven through Punxsutawney several times, but never stopped.
Yeah, back in the 80s. And then when my son Mike played at State High, they played Punxsutawney in the 90s. So I went out there, but I only went to the high school football field. I never went to Gobbler's Knob, not one time. People would go have a blast.
I've driven past the diner. I think there's like a huge, groundhog, like a wooden groundhog out in front of the Punxsutawney diner.
Man, I have no idea. God, I go in there, get out. I mean, it got smaller in the rearview mirror. I felt better. But I give them all the credit in the world. They've done a brilliant. The marketing of it is brilliant. Think about it. Okay, we're going to take a rodent out, and we're going to hold them up and tell them there's six more weeks of winter, and they'll come by the thousands. I wonder, has Lawrence ever done a show there?
No. I remember one time on one of my morning shows several years ago, we picked up the direct feed from PCN and actually aired the one of the calls when you one of the predictions live one morning.
I mean, just take one moment and think about it. Just take a moment.
If the photograph is not photoshopped, but your friend and mine, and of course, longtime friend of Drew Kelly's, Joe Portelli, he changed his portrait pic on his Facebook. He was standing at the with a big Gobbler's Knob sign behind him.
Oh God!
As to when it was taken, I have no idea. Look, maybe it was a little dated, but I was looking at it close, whether it was photoshopped or not. I wouldn't put it past him.
Oh no, he went there.
Okay.
Look, it's a party. It's fun. I love fun. But I mean, really, seriously, think about it. Just think about it. Thousands of people showed up. Okay. Matt Leon next. Then Jimmy Cepulo at 4:06. Neil Coulong, final half hour today. Great to have you on board. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history. In 1876, the National League of Professional Baseball Clubs, known as the National League, was formed in New York. The teams were located in Boston, Chicago, Cincinnati, Hartford, Louisville, New York, Philadelphia, and St. Louis. It was on this date in 1949 that golfer Ben Hogan was seriously injured in an auto accident in Van Horn, Texas. He came back from that terrible accident and then won major tournaments, including the Masters, U.S. Open, and British Open, all in the 1953 season, 4 years later. 1967, the American Basketball Association was formed, the ABA. Huh? We had a trip. Where we had to go to Pittsburgh. We were supposed to land in State College, but because of fog, we had to land in Pittsburgh. And they told us the bus was going to be there, and you know, like, okay, well, how soon it's going to be? Oh yeah, it should be here just a, you know, just a little bit. Okay, fine. Well, then we found out the bus was still 2.5 hours away. And I said to Dick Girardi, he says, "Dick, let's get out of here. Let's rent a car and get out of here." And Dick, and it turned out that Dick had points, so we decided to use his. Since he had points, the rent a car cost us $7. Oh, okay, that's fine. So we get out of there. So on the way back, we started talking about defunct leagues, Jeff Tarman, Dick, and me, and we started going through the old ABA. So I started talking about the franchises in the old ABA, the Oakland Oaks, the Anaheim Amigos, the Dallas Chaparrals, the Houston Mavericks, the Memphis Pros, the Floridians, the Minnesota Pipers, the Indiana Pacers, the Kentucky Colonels, the Spirits of St. Louis, the New Jersey Americans, then the New Jersey Nets.
I was going through a bunch of throwback T-shirts not too long ago, and I found one for the Pittsburgh Condors.
Pittsburgh Condors, Connie Hawkins. Play for the Pittsburgh Condors. Of course, the San Antonio Spurs were the Texas Chaparrals, the Dallas Chaparrals. Let's see, who else? The Carolina Cougars. Billy Cunningham played for them. The Virginia Squires. Original franchise for Julius Erving. The Washington Capitals. Let's see, anybody else? That might be it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, the Utah Stars. Yeah, the Los Angeles Stars became the Utah Stars. The San Diego Sales, the San Diego Conquistadors. The Denver Rockets, who became the Denver Nuggets. The favorite, my favorite Spirits of St. Louis story, and I've told you, you know this story, the Marvin Barnes story.
Mm-hmm.
You know the story, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
About flying. Do you know that one?
I do.
Marvin Barnes played at Providence, and they had to go from, I think, Kentucky to St. Louis. It's not a long flight. And the plane is scheduled to take off at 11 o'clock, and because it goes into Central Time in St. Louis, it lands at 10:30. So it's a 90-minute flight. Or, you know, well, it leaves at 11 o'clock and it lands at 10:45. It's a 45-minute flight. And he says, "I'm not getting on that plane." He says, "What? What are you talking about?" He says, "Marvin Barnes is not getting on any time machine." He refused to get on the plane. Marvin Tire Iron Barnes. It's a bizarre world out there, my man. It really is. He says, "Marvin Barnes does not get on any time machine." All right. Matt Leon joins us from Philadelphia. Matt, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
All right. Let us start with the Sixers. Joel Embiid, I know he's been hurt, but no All-Star game. You know, your thoughts.
When he didn't get voted in, well, when he didn't get the starting position, even though he did really well in the fan numbers, but the player vote really kept him out, I didn't think he would get named by the coaches. I figured that it would be a hard struggle, given that he hasn't played as many games as other guys, and that would be held against him. And you get the feeling that's really what it was. And I know people around here are bummed, and I get it, but I kind of also tell them that the idea of Joel Embiid spending the rest of the season playing with a chip on his shoulder is not a bad thing.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. State of that team right now, in your opinion?
I think they're – I mean, they've lost two straight, but they're going to be okay. I still think the playoffs are a significant possibility this year. It'll really be interesting, assuming Ben Simmons comes back around the All-Star break or so, to see if they kick it to another level. there's a lot to like. I think they have finally kind of figured out that Jahlil Okafor doesn't really fit in. I think they will try to move him, maybe wait until draft time and try to use him in some sort of a package. But I think it's become pretty obvious that he is the odd man out in the front court, especially given how well Ersan Ilyasova has played. And Robert Covington has proven to be really a key piece just because of his defense and his ability to shoot the three. But there's really a lot to like. When Joel Embiid is healthy and playing, the Sixers are a very good Eastern Conference team that can take on anyone on any night.
Wayne Simmons, big day yesterday. Your thoughts on, look, it's the NHL All-Star game. It's 3-on-3, but still he distinguished himself really well.
Yeah, and really, Wayne Simmons is a great story. I mean, when you look at how far he has come leading up to getting into the NHL, his time in L.A., and then when the Flyers acquired him, and now he is about as consistent a goal scorer as they have. And that was really neat to see him get that yesterday and get it in L.A., you know, where his NHL career started. And it sounds like a lot of people out there still remember him from his time there. So very cool. And he's a real critical piece to what the Flyers are trying to do here.
All right. Overall, you know, give me a state of where the Flyers are in your opinion.
I get the feeling, I think they're kind of where they were last year. I think they are a playoff team, but that's about as far as I will go. I think when the dust settles, they will end up grabbing that eighth wild card or that second wild card spot and be the eighth seed again and lose in the first round. They are really trying to build it the right way, and that means a lot of youth. You know, people want improvement to be consistently on an upward slope, and you know it's not. It's a lot of time a jagged line graph. It trends in one direction, but you have ups and downs. And I think this year you've seen some of the inconsistency related to some of the younger players. Shane Gostisbehere not quite as jaw-dropping as he was last year. Travis Konecny had a long drought, where he didn't score. But I think they're right about where they should be, and I really think they will stay the course, and it will pay off. The pipeline is flush with talent for this Flyers organization, especially on the blue line, and it will continue to come to pass here over the next year or year and a half.
The Eagles actually had a couple of players in the Pro Bowl last night. Your thoughts on where they are as a franchise, and is upward mobility a little bit easier than people realize?
I think in the NFL is probably the greatest year-to-year league of any of the sports, where you can really stink one year and go to the playoffs the next year. Not that the Eagles really stunk, but you can make great strides. I think a lot of it is because you only have 16 games. All it takes is one or two games for you to get a break that you weren't expecting and maybe a win, and that completely throws the arrow out of whack as far as what you're supposed to do. I think they've got the quarterback, Carson Wentz. And
no
when
doubt.
You've got the quarterback, that is, you know, that's a big part of the mountain you've climbed. They have a lot of holes. It's going to be a very important offseason. They need wide receivers, not just one. They need multiple. They need cornerbacks, not one. They need multiple. They need to shore up the offensive line, specifically more for depth purposes. The unit overall, I think, is okay now, but Jason Peters will be another year older. Lane Johnson's got two strikes against him when it comes to PEDs. You've got to be cognizant of any nonsense there. They still need pass rushers. They struggled really at times getting a consistent heat on the quarterback. And they need a running back. Are you all in with Ryan Matthews after being injured up and down all year and injured at the end of the year, a relatively significant one? So that's a lot. That's a lot to fill in one offseason. That's a lot to fill in one draft. But, you know, there's no reason to think Carson Wentz won't take another big step forward next year. And when you've got the quarterback, you can cover up a lot of other problems. But they do need a lot of help. It'll be interesting to see, number one, if they move anybody out to clear up salary cap space. I think they will. And to see how active they are in free agency leading up to the draft.
You mentioned in that about Lane Johnson, two strikes against him, no question. How different a team are they when Lane Johnson actually is with them?
I mean, I don't think it's you can't necessarily draw a complete line, but You know, that 3-0 start happened with Lane Johnson in the lineup, and then they lost the fourth game to Detroit by a point because Ryan Matthews fumbled when they're trying to run out the clock. You can make the argument easily should have been 4-0 when Lane Johnson starts that suspension. They win twice while he's out. And then he comes back, they win the last two games. Were they garbage games? Absolutely. But, you know, hard to argue with 5 wins in 6 tries with a guy in the lineup and 2 wins in 9 tries in the games where he wasn't there. He's really critical to their offensive success. He's probably their second-best offensive player. I don't think, not probably, he is their second-best offensive player behind Wentz. And when he's not there, it's kind of everything else falls out of whack. You know, because you got to move this guy over here to fill in for him, and that weakens the guard position, and then you got to push this guy over here, right. And that's assuming everybody else is playing well and healthy. And then if they're not, you're really stuck. When he's healthy, when he was healthy, the line was in pretty good shape. The line was up and down at best when he was out there, and he's just such a great athlete. It allows you to do a lot of things on the edge with him. So, you know, I think you have to go forward, you know, that everything's going to be okay, and he's finally kind of gets it. But, you know, when you make a mistake like he did, even if it's completely accidental and it happens a second time, you have to at least understand the possibility of something like that happening again.
Right, the domino effect when he's out is too much.
That's
for them
the word I was looking for.
Just thought I'd help out there. Villanova lost on the road. Okay, that happens. But then yesterday had a great game with Virginia. When you look at Villanova right now, what makes them really good? What makes them vulnerable?
I think what makes them really good is confidence. Josh Hart at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. Ability to defend without fouling. They do so many of the little things so well that don't show up in a box score, and they take nothing for granted, which I think is impressive as a defending national champion. Depth, I think, is a concern when you get into the tournament. It doesn't really sound like Phil Booth's going to be a factor this year because of injury, so that's a kid that was supposed to be part of the top part of your rotation, a starter that you haven't had at all and you're going to have to continue to work without. I think they can be vulnerable down low against a team that maybe has a very big front court. It might be a tough matchup. But I would take my chances with this group, though, you know, in the tournament, given what they've done, what they know they can do going forward. I was actually kind of surprised they dropped all the way down to 4 this week. I didn't expect them to stay at 1 in the AP, but I didn't think they'd drop all the way to 4. So, you know, you kind of throw in maybe they use that as a little bit of motivation. Once again, not a bad thing.
Right. Now, one thing above all, they don't panic. They have a cool, regardless of the situation, and while some the wheels will come off the wagon for some, for them they're like, okay, we're fine. And that's what impresses me about them more than anything.
Yeah, and you look yesterday, I mean, yes, it was a home game at the center, but that's an outstanding Virginia team that can defend the heck out of anyone. And they were down 12 with 10 to play, or 10 to 12 with play, and they just systematically worked their way back, got themselves in a position where, you know, they end up with the last shot. Worse, you go to overtime, they get the tip in by DiVincenzo to grab the win. So I think that proves your point right there, that, you know, that is a spot, especially a non-conference game. You might get a lot of teams, not that they mail it in, but, you know, all right, well, it's not our night, you know, what are you going to do? And they just kept grinding, and they just grind every possession out. And when you get the chance to watch them in person and see it up close and just see the body control and the man-on-man defense, how they use angles and screens, it's really impressive.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Next half hour, Jimmy Cephalo, the play-by-play voice of the Miami Dolphins, the former Nittany Lion, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Jimmy Cephalo, next half hour, Piston area zone. He went to Penn State, had a great career. Went to the NFL, had a really good career. Played in two Super Bowls. And has carved out a great television career. And now is the play-by-play voice of the Miami Dolphins. He is also an incredible wine collector. He collects a lot of wine, as opposed to the suit who downs it by the carton in the back room. I mean, it's the suit knows that Boone's Farm isn't really legit, right?
Boone's Farm, come on. That's good stuff.
One day we're out on the golf course, and the suit says, we get to like the sixth hole, and he says, and he's like, I brought some wine. I'm like, great. It's in a box. I'm like, no.
Actually, uncle on my wife's side, he makes his own wine.
Well, Jimmy collects wine. Jimmy has an extensive wine collection that goes back 25 years. And to be honest with you, Jack Ham is a wine connoisseur, has been for a long time. And Jack at home has a really well stocked bar of different wines. But not to the extent, Jimmy collects it. He collects it. He is, and there's a history to wine with it. And it goes back to his great-grandfather in Italy who made wine. And then his grandfather did it. And then his father came over and he made it. And that's how Jimmy got involved in it. I asked the suit once, I said, have you ever felt like your wine tasted like cardboard? You know what he said? Yeah, I wonder why. Then he proceeded to slice it three fairways over.
I was going to say, then came the bridge. That's another story in itself.
The bridge We're 0-2 at the bridge. It's almost unbelievable that what that bridge has done to him twice in tournaments. Lucky it's a scramble, so we just used the ball that was on the green.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.